Good morning, I am Kelly Thorpe from USDA ARS Maricopa, and I'm going to tell you today about my efforts to combine a couple different information technologies for analyzing site-specific yield data and evapotranspiration in cotton. So all that I'm presenting falls under the precision ag category. And we've conducted a few field experiments in cotton at our location that have generated substantial spatial data sets, including soil texture maps, moisture data, remote sensing images, and yield data across the 12-acre field. So what I'd like to do is apply differing information technologies to synthesize these data and make sense of them spatially. Specific objectives were to develop first a GIS tool that could be used to manage simulation models site-specifically. I'm going to talk about a technique to combine remote sensing data with the model, and then the overall goal will be to analyze the site-specific yield and ET data for our irrigation studies. GIS, there are many choices for GIS systems. You're probably familiar with Esri. I'm fond of one called Quantum GIS. It's open source, relatively new. It's easily and freely downloaded, and it can run on very many different types of computers. It also has a way to write custom scripts so you can automate your geoprocessing routines. And I've developed a tool I call Geospatial Simulation, which is essentially a Quantum GIS plugin that will manage simulation model runs spatially. It is also an open source tool that's available that you can download from the Quantum GIS repository. And one of the main features is that it can be used for many different models as long as they utilize ASCII input and output files. So here's a screenshot of the Quantum GIS environment, and I'm highlighting the plugins menu with my geospatial simulation tool installed, and that offers several different tasks. The basic concept of the software is that the user must define a base layer. This is your map of management zones. It's a map of the spatial units that you deem homogeneous in your field. At its core, it's a polygon shapefile. And so the user must first prepare this shapefile by adding data to it so that the simulations can be based on that data. So the tool contains algorithms for that purpose, for converting raster images to vector shapefiles for processing, and for geoprocessing spatial data within each base layer polygon, summarizing data within the polygons. And then the tool will automate simulations and optimize and model optimizations uniquely for each management zone. So this demonstrates sort of the concept behind it. If we have a attribute table that's part of the GIS, it contains some spatial data. We use a template file to then merge that information into the input file format for a model, run the simulation, generate some output file, and an instruction file tells the GIS how to search that output file, pull out some spatial information of interest like yield or ET, and then move that data back to the GIS. And so this happens iteratively over all the spatial units. So let's test the system. Let's use it. I'm going to apply it to a field where we have spatial yield data and evapotranspiration. I'll be doing simulations of that. I'm using the DSAT cropping system model, particularly a crop grow cotton model, which I did present yesterday if you saw that talk. I won't go into much detail about how that works then. The field data was collected over two seasons at Maricopa in 2009 and 2011 over a 5-hectare cotton field. Under furrow irrigation, we had 16 individual cotton borders, which were managed using four different irrigation scheduling approaches replicated four times. So this experiment generated quite a lot of spatial data. We have soil textures at 6 depths down to 180 centimeters. Over the two seasons, that was at 191 different locations across the 5 hectares. I've used the pitot transfer function to convert those soil textures to the soil water limits and parameters required by the model. and I then used a Krieging interpolation to summarize those soil textures over the field. The next step beyond Krieging would then to be to summarize the Kriegd estimates within each of the base layer polygons. We have soil moisture data at 112 different points where neutron probes were used, seven access tubes per border. I used this data to specify the initial soil water content in the model and also to estimate observed evapotranspiration and seepage. Irrigation management was variable, even though it was surface irrigation, because the irrigation rates and dates varied. They were unique per each border, and we have advance and recession times of the flood irrigation to help us try to estimate how much water would have been infiltrated at each point along the length of the border. This is unfortunately probably the weakest link in this kind of precision ag study because we are still using surface irrigation here. But we did recently acquire a new linear move system, so we'll be moving into sprinkler in the coming year. We also have monthly airborne remote sensing data for NDVI and canopy temperature. Plant data was collected, biomass, destructive biomass samples at certain locations. We have canopy height and width information spatially. And our yield was measured site-specifically. In 320 different unique zones across the field, we collected the yield with the picker, and each of those samples was ginned separately, so we have site-specific information for yield. This shows a map of the field again, where from east to west across the field, we have 16 different borders. Within each border, 20 subplots or polygons where we measure yield. And so I'll be conducting my simulations in each one of these 320 zones. The green dots represent the neutron probe locations. And underneath, you can see a late season NDVI image of the field. To parameterize the cotton model that I'm using, again, the soil textures are measured and are site specific. So all of that information was managed by the GIS, moving those soil texture information into the model for each unique zone. Weather information was consistent across all the zones. It comes from an Azmet weather station that's a kilometer and a half from the field. We did some minimal calibration on the crop parameters for phenology to get emergence and anthesis dates correct, and we calibrated other parameters against our biomass measurements at the site. Irrigation management was specified as applied, but again, we tried to make it site-specific as best that we could by analyzing the advance and recession times by using our Windsurfer program, which is our analysis tool for surface irrigation, and using the neutron probe data. By sort of looking at all three of those different items, we could sort of make an estimate about how irrigation was varying site-specifically. So now what I'd like to do is to try to tune the model for site-specific data. And I'm using a simulated annealing optimization algorithm for this, focusing on three different parameters in the model. First is LF max, which governs the photosynthesis calculation in the model. SRGF governs how roots grow, how deep they grow, how much root grows in each soil layer. And EO ratio is essentially a maximum crop coefficient that can be adjusted for tuning the evapotranspiration simulations. So the objective of the optimization would be to minimize error simultaneously between measured and simulated yield and measured and simulated ET for each of those 320 zones. This shows the result basically just to demonstrate that optimization strategy is performing well with the model. We get a very, very nice fit for both yield here shown and also ET. However, if we want to use such an approach for real-time estimation of irrigation management or forward prediction of yield, we're not going to know the final yield yet, and we're only going to know the evapotranspiration up to the date that we are currently at. So we have to turn to some other kind of indicator, and for that we're using remote sensing. So remote sensing indices can be used to estimate leaf area index, and I'm going to be using remote sensing here to optimize the leaf area index simulation in the model. I've looked at the compound canopy index that was reported by Scottford in 2004. Essentially, what I'm doing is using our remotely sensed NDVI as an estimate of canopy width and our ground-based measurements of canopy height as canopy height. The index is then calculated like this, where we have the current NDVI, the maximum NDVI expected for the season, current height, and a maximum height specified. Just to demonstrate the performance of that index, here we have that index calculated on the X against a LICOR meter, an LAI 2000 meter that was adjusted to biomass samples. And we get a very good relationship, very impressive relationship there. So let's do now another attempt to optimize the model. We can use the same simulated annealing approach, same three parameters, only now we're going to minimize the error simultaneously between the measured and simulated LAI. For our remote sensing data, we have six dates during the season that I'm working on here, and also again using our measured and simulated ET. So now we get this estimate for yield. If we wanted to use this technique for forward prediction of yield, about an 11% error between measured and simulated yield. And ET, total ET, total seasonal ET, is estimated with an error of about 2%. So in conclusion, I find Quantum GIS to be a very useful tool for developing custom GIS applications, and I've developed an open source tool that can be used to manage model simulation site specifically across the field. Crop grow cotton, as I have shown here and also showed in my talk yesterday, can respond to different management in the field, simulating site-specific here, simulating site-specific yield very well, and ET as well. And I found three basic parameters that generally are very sensitive to simulations of yield and ET. So in the future, we'd like to use a framework like this for real-time management of irrigation water and perhaps nitrogen fertilizer too, where we would essentially collect observations while we're moving through the growing season about crop growth, about water use. And then as those observations arrive, we would incrementally adjust the parameters of the model. And essentially, then the model becomes a tool to fill the gaps between our observations that we're collecting and also to predict forward in time to estimate when we might need to irrigate next or what our final yield prediction might be. And that's all I have.
Thank questions? You. Any questions for Kelly?
Yep. That happens in the model. It's actually, the model attempts to simulate the root growth within different soil layers depending on the conditions. So
can you care to elaborate on the percent error difference you saw in yield versus at what is tightest on your other correlations between the model and what you think is going on there?
Oh, on the error that I have here? I think my opinion is that we have a very difficult time in this study quantifying the amount of irrigation water that is infiltrating at a particular location, because the field was just flooded. All we really have are measurements of total volume, and we have a few advance and recession times. So you could kind of try to get at how much water was applied at a particular location, but who knows? And these models are one-dimensional, so it's basically designed for rainfall or overhead sprinkler. Applying them for surface irrigation is more tricky.
I have a question for you too, because my research group has been thinking about what you've already done here. So my question to you is, if we were trying to incorporate this into decision support tool, let's say a crop consultant would have available, and they want to be able to run it, as you said, incrementally for customers' farms, how much can we reduce the parameterization of these models and still get reasonable results? And again, I think what we'd be concerned about would be relative changes as opposed to absolute yield numbers.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Simultaneously moving forward, I do have, I would like to also program the FAO 56 approach for irrigation scheduling, I think that you presented, and kind of be able to compare these two models side by side. We have a simpler model with FAO 56. It's maybe a little easier to parameterize. These crop models have, you know, hundreds of parameters. You do get a yield estimation out of it, so you might have some advantages, but quantifying the complexity of the model needed for this particular application is certainly important. So.
Great. Any other questions for Kelly? If not, thank you, Kelly.
Thank you.